committee has described as excellent will get underway in an hour. BBC News.
Now on BBC Radio 4, Pippa Nixon, Jamie Parker and Samantha Spiro star in a new dramatisation by Charlotte Jones of Jane Austen's masterpiece, Pride and Prejudice.
Mr. Bennet! Oh, Mary, have you seen him? Stop that reading!
Mama! Oh,
Mr. Bennet! Lydia, Katie! Mr. Bennet! Jane, listen, have you seen your father?
He's in the library, Mama.
Mr. Bennet! Mr. Bennet!
It is a truth universally acknowledged.
Mr. Bennet!
That a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife.
But you are here all the while. My dear Mr. Bennet, have you heard that Netherfield Park is let at last?
I have not.
Don't you want to know who has taken it?
You want to tell me, and I have no objection to hearing it.
Mrs. Long says that Netherfield is taken by a young man of large fortune from the north of England, that he came down on Monday in a chaise and four to see the place and was so delighted that he is to take possession before Michaelmas.
What is his name?
Mr. Bingley.
Oh, is he married or single?
Oh, single, to be sure. A single man of large fortune, 4,000 or 5,000 a year. What a fine thing for one of our girls.
How so? How can it affect them?
Oh, my dear Mr. Bennet, how can you be so tiresome? You must know that I'm thinking of his marrying one of them.
Is that his design in settling here?
Oh, design? How can you talk so? But it is very likely that he may fall in love with one of them, and therefore you must visit him as soon as he comes.
I see no occasion for that.
Indeed, you must go, for it will be impossible for us to visit him if you do not.
You are over-scrupulous, madam. I will send a few lines by you to assure him of my hearty consent to his marrying whichever he chooses of the girls.
Oh.
Though I must throw in a good word for my little Lizzie.
You will do no such thing. Lizzie is not a bit better than the others, and I'm sure she is not half so handsome as Jane, nor half so good-humoured as Lydia. But you're always giving her the preference.
They have none of them much to recommend them. They are all silly and ignorant like other girls.
Mr. Bennet, how can you abuse your own children in such a way? You take delight in vexing me. You have no compassion for my poor nerves.
You mistake me, my dear. I have a high respect for your nerves. They are my old friends. I have heard you mention them with consideration these last 20 years, but I hope you will get over it and live to see many young men of 4,000 a year come into this neighbourhood.
It will be of no use to us if 20 such should come, since you will not visit them.
Depend upon it, my dear, when there are 20, I will visit them all. Close the door behind you, my dear.
Mr. Bennet was an odd mixture of sarcastic humour, reserve and caprice. But the experience of 23 years had been insufficient to make his wife understand his character.
Girls, all is lost!
She was a woman of mean understanding, little information and uncertain temper.
Oh, wicked man! Wicked, wicked man!
And the sole business of her life was to get her daughters married.
A little compassion for my nerves. How my head aches.
Sorry, Mama. Shall I rub your temples, Mama?
Oh, yes. Oh, and my shoulders, dear Jane. Oh, what a godsend you are to me.
Mary must practice, Mrs. Bennet. What will Mr. Bingley think if she doesn't play well? He will not like it at all.
Well, we have no way of knowing what Mr. Bingley likes since we are not to visit.
But you forget, Mama, that we shall meet him at the assemblies. Mrs. Long has promised to introduce him.
I do not believe that Mrs. Long will do any such thing, Lizzie. She has two nieces of her own. She is such a selfish, hypocritical woman, and I have no opinion of her.
It is fortunate, then, my dear, that you may have the advantage of your friend and introduce Mr. Bingley to her.
Oh, I'm sick of Mr. Bingley. Don't keep coughing so, Kitty, for heaven's sake.
I cannot help it.
Why didn't you tell me so before, Mrs. Bennet? If I had known as much this morning, I certainly would not have called on him. It is very unlucky, but as I have actually paid the visit, we cannot escape the acquaintance now.
Oh, but I knew I would persuade you at last. I was sure you loved your girls too much to neglect such an acquaintance.
I don't think it amusing, Papa, how you tease us.
Now, Lydia, you have an excellent father. I do not know how we will ever make amends to him for his kindness.
I will leave you to ponder on it, ladies. There now, Kitty, you may cough as much as you please.
Lydia, my love, though you are the youngest, I dare say Mr. Bingley will dance with you at the next ball.
Oh, I am not afraid, for though I am the youngest, I am the tallest.
What if Mr. Bingley is exceedingly short?
Then I shan't like to dance with him anyway.
Of course he won't be short. Oh, I am well satisfied, girls. If I can see one of you happily settled at Netherfield and all of the remainder of you equally well married, I shall have nothing left to wish for.
In a few days, Mr. Bingley returned Mr. Bennet's visit and sat about 10 minutes with him in his library. He had entertained hopes of being admitted to a sight of the young ladies, of whose beauty he had heard much. But he saw only the father. The ladies were somewhat more fortunate, for they had the advantage of ascertaining him from an upper window.
Oh, girls! Oh, look, he comes on a horse!
It is a black horse. Oh. And he wears a blue coat.
He looks of average height, though he is seated.
Oh, what a gentleman he is!
An invitation to dinner was soon afterwards dispatched, but Mr. Bingley was obliged to be in town the following day. Mrs. Bennet was quite disconcerted, but Mrs. Long quieted her fears by informing her he was gone to London to get a party for the forthcoming assembly. And so it was. When his party entered the assembly room, it consisted of 5 altogether. Mr. Bingley, his 2 sisters, the husband of the eldest, and another young man.
His name is Darcy. He has 10,000 a year.
He is handsomer than Mr. Bingley.
A large estate in Derbyshire. 10,000 a year. Oh, he is a fine figure of a man. Bingley has a pleasant way about him, but this Darcy is very tall.
Mama, please.
He's the talk of the room. He has danced only once with Miss Bingley. She's a handsome girl, but not as pretty as my Jane.
Oh, Mama, dear, forbear.
Mrs. Bennet. Oh. What a pleasure it is. Is this not a splendid gathering?
Mr. Bingley, we could not believe that we had lost you to London almost as soon as you arrived here. I hope you are not disappointed with what Meryton has to offer you, sir.
Oh, no, indeed. Everybody has been most kind and attentive.
Oh.
Miss Bennet, I wondered if I might have the pleasure of this dance.
You will, most certainly. She loves to dance. Jane, dear?
Thank you, Mr. Bingley.
Oh, only look how well they go together. Where is Lady Lucas? I wonder how she's seen my Jane.
Your arrival in Hertfordshire has caused a great stir, Mr. Bingley.
It is true. I've never enjoyed such popularity. I hope I can live up to expectation.
Are you happy to be here?
Oh, yes. I enjoy the country far more than the city. There is so much here, Miss Bennet, that is to be admired. I can see nothing but good.
Netherfield is indeed a magnificent house.
Oh, but you must visit at the earliest opportunity. And your family, of course. In fact, I must give a ball at Netherfield to thank everyone for their welcome.
That would be much appreciated, I know, particularly by my younger sisters.
Then I will fix a date. And I must introduce you to my sisters.
I will be pleased to make their acquaintance.
Your mother is right, you know. You dance very well.
You are too kind.
Not at all. I noticed you when I first entered the room.
You will make me blush.
And I'm sure even that will become you very well.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, but with your kind permission, we must dance again. That dance was over too quickly, don't you think?
I do.
Oh, but wait. Look at my friend Darcy. He's not dancing. Well, he is a wonderful fellow, but sometimes he has to be encouraged to let down his guard.
Ah.
Who is the young lady sitting behind him?
Oh, that is my sister, Lizzie.
I will urge him to dance with her. But remember, you must save your next dance for me.
You have my word.
Come, Darcy. I hate to see you standing about in this stupid manner. You'd much better dance.
Your sisters are engaged, and there is not another woman in the room whom it would not be a punishment for me to stand up with.
Well, upon my honour, friend, I have never seen so many pleasant girls in my life as I have seen this evening.
Hmm. You are dancing with the most handsome girl in the room.
Miss Bennet. She is the most beautiful creature I ever beheld.
Hmm.
But there is one of her sisters sitting down just behind you who is very pretty and, I dare say, very agreeable.
Hmm?
Do let me ask my partner to introduce you.
What do you mean? Her? Well, she is tolerable enough, but not handsome enough to tempt me.
Lizzie, will you not dance now? Mr. Bingley says you must dance with Mr. Darcy.
It appears I am not handsome enough to warrant Mr. Darcy's attentions.
What?
I heard Mr. Darcy say that he could not bear to look at my inferior features for the duration even of a dance.
Oh, surely not.
Do not fear, Jane. My heart is not broken. Suffice to say, I fear Mr. Darcy, for all his 10,000 a year, is proud, and I do not feel cordially at all towards him. There, at least, we have something in common.
Oh, my dear Mr. Bennet, we have had a most delightful evening. Oh, I wish you'd been there. Jane was so admired. Everybody said how well she looked, and Mr. Bingley danced with her twice. Oh, she was the only creature in the room he asked a second time. First of all, he asked Charlotte Lucas. Oh, I was so vexed to see him stand up with her. However, he did not admire her at all. Indeed, nobody can, you know. Oh, my dear. Oh, I am quite delighted with Mr. Bingley. He is so excessively handsome, and his sisters are charming women. I never in my life saw anything more elegant than their dresses.
Wife, can you not see that I'm sleeping?
You would not believe the shocking rudeness of his friend, Mr. Darcy. He snubbed poor Lizzie. But I can assure you that Lizzie does not lose much by not suiting his fancy, for he is a most disagreeable, horrid man. So high and conceited that there was no enduring him.
Oh, Lizzie, Mr. Bingley is just what a young man ought to be. Sensible, good-humoured, lively, and I never saw such lovely manners.
He is also handsome, which a young man ought likewise to be, if he possibly can. And rich, which will please our mother.
Oh, she thinks only of our futures, since father cannot provide for us.
Oh, let us not talk of the parlous state of our inheritance. We shall all be impoverished old maids, I know, but there'll be plenty of time to mourn that. For now... I want only to hear of Mr. Bingley and his admiration for you, dear sister.
I must admit, I was very much flattered by his asking me to dance a second time. I did not expect such a compliment.
What could be more natural than his asking you again? He cannot help seeing you at least five times as pretty as every other woman in the room. Certainly, he is very agreeable, and I give you leave to like him. You've liked many a stupider person.
Oh, Lizzie.
In fact, I never heard you speak ill of a human being in my life.
I would not want to be too hasty to judge anyone. But rest assured, I always speak my mind.
I know you do. Oh, hold still. Mm. Your hair is tangled here. And so you like Mr. Bingley's sisters, too?
Mm.
Their manners are not equal to his.
Certainly not at first. But they are very pleasing women when you converse with them. Miss Bingley is to live with her brother and keep his house.
Elizabeth listened in silence, but was not convinced.
I'm so pleased she'll be.
With more quickness of observation and less pliancy of temper than her sister, she was very little disposed to approve them. They were, in fact, very fine ladies, but proud and conceited. They were rather handsome and had a fortune each of £20,000 and were therefore in every respect entitled to think well of themselves and meanly of others. Within a short walk of Longbourn lived a family with whom the Bennets were particularly intimate. Sir William Lucas had been formerly in trade in Meryton, where he had made a tolerable fortune and risen to the honour of knighthood. Lady Lucas was a very good kind of woman, not too clever to be a valuable neighbour to Mrs. Bennet. They had several children. The eldest of them, a sensible, intelligent young woman, was Elizabeth's intimate friend.
Charlotte,
my dearest Lizzie.
You began the evening well, Charlotte. You were Mr. Bingley's first choice.
Yes, but he seemed to like his second better.
Oh, you mean Jane, I suppose, because he danced with her twice. Yes, he did seem to admire her. Indeed, I rather believe he did.
Yes, indeed. I heard Mr. Bingley proclaim Miss Bennet the prettiest girl in the room, without a doubt.
Oh, upon my word. Well, that seals it.
My hearings are more to the purpose than yours, Lizzie. Mr. Darcy is not so well worth listening to as his friend, is he?
Poor Lizzie, to be only just tolerable. I beg you would not put it into Lizzie's head to be vexed by his ill treatment, for he is such a disagreeable man that it would be quite a misfortune to be liked by him. Another time, Lizzie, I would not dance with him if I were you.
I believe, ma'am, I may safely promise you never to dance with him.
It is strange, but his pride does not offend me so much as pride often does, because there is an excuse for it. One cannot wonder that so very fine a young man, with family, fortune, so much in his favour, should think highly of himself.
Pride is a very common failing, I believe. By all that I have ever read, I am convinced that it is very common indeed.
Yes, thank you, Mary.
Oh, I could easily forgive his pride, Charlotte, if it had not mortified mine.
Dear Lizzie, I am mortified only for him. Perhaps he will redeem himself next Saturday.
On what occasion?
My father is to throw a ball here.
Oh, heavens! Oh, Jane, we must repair at once to town, to the dressmaker's.
Mama, I have been practising some new Scottish airs that I will be pleased to play at the assembly.
Oh, Mary, dear, you shall study yourself to death one of these days. I declare I don't know where you get it from.
I assume this is a compliment, which I thank you for, Mother.
Mama, I need some satin trim for my blue gown.
And I refuse to wear one of my sister's old dresses to the ball. I must have my own, Mama.
Oh, yes, 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 you must, Lydia. Oh, there is so much to do, I barely know where to begin.
Well, when shall we go to the dressmaker's?
Lizzie, will you walk in the lane with me?
With pleasure.
Oh, Charlotte. It is clear to me that Mr. Bingley does admire her. And if I know Jane, she is already on her way to being in love. However, Jane unites great strength of feeling with a serene composure of temper. A gentleness which is sometimes misunderstood.
I think it a disadvantage to be so very guarded. In 9 cases out of 10, a woman had better show more affection than she feels. Bingley likes your sister undoubtedly, but he may never do more than like her if she does not encourage him.
But she is encouraging. As much as she can be.
Jane should make the most of every half an hour in which she can command his attention. When she is secure of him, there'll be reason for falling in love as much as she chooses.
Your plan is a good one when nothing is in question but the desire of getting a rich husband. But these are not Jane's feelings. She's not acting by design.
But why should she not want a rich husband? It is not a sin. Sometimes it is a necessity.
Charlotte, money cannot be the first consideration.
Then what is?
Happiness, of course. If by happy fortune the man she loves also happens to be rich, then all is to the good.
And if he is poor? What are the chances of happiness then?
You're trying to vex me, I know it, and I shall not fall into your trap. There can be no happiness in marriage without love. There, I have said it. I'd rather be poor and single than marry a man I did not love. And I know Jane is of the same mind.
Well, I wish Jane success with all my heart, but in my opinion, happiness in marriage is entirely a matter of chance.
You make me laugh, Charlotte. But I know you're only trying to provoke me. I don't believe for one minute that you would ever act in this premeditated way yourself.
Ah, Sir William.
Mrs. Bennet. Lizzie,
I hope everything meets with your approval tonight, madam.
Oh, you spoil us with your hospitality, Sir William. And yet I could not help but notice there are none of those delicious almond buns you served last time.
Mother!
Oh, I leave all the domestic arrangements to Lady Lucas.
Indeed, and I know it is an onerous task for her. I delight in domestic arrangements altogether and would think nothing of a special journey to the bun house to please my guests, but la-di-da, we are all different. Oh, look, Lizzie, here was that horrid young man, Mr. Darcy.
Mother, speak more gently.
I wonder you invited him at all, Sir William. I'm sure he thinks us all beneath him. It is just as well he does not get to taste your buns, sir, as I'm sure he would consider them inferior. Good evening, Mr. Darcy.
Good evening, Mrs. Bennet. Miss Bennet, Sir William.
Mr. Darcy.
Well, I'm sure I don't know why you wish to speak with us, Mr. Darcy.
Mother, look how well Mr. Bingley and Jane dance together.
Occupied in observing Mr. Bingley's attentions to her sister, Elizabeth was far from suspecting that she was herself becoming an object of some interest. Mr. Darcy had at first scarcely allowed her to be pretty. But no sooner had he made it clear to himself and to his friends that she had hardly a good feature in her face, than he began to find it rendered uncommonly intelligent by the beautiful expression in her dark eyes.
Your sister dances well.
Oh. If you will excuse me, Mr. Darcy, I am urgently wanted elsewhere. And if you take offence at that, I'm sure it will be of your own choosing.
Mother, I'm sure Mr. Darcy infers nothing by your leaving us.
I'm not afraid of you, young man.
Ma'am.
Welcome. Welcome to my home, Mr. Darcy.
Sir William.
What a charming amusement this is for young people. Mm. But my dear Lizzie, why are you not dancing? Mr. Darcy, you must allow me to present this young lady to you as a very desirable partner. You cannot refuse to dance, I am sure, when such beauty is before you.
Miss Bennet, will you allow me the honour...
Indeed, Sir William, I have not the least intention of dancing.
Why ever not? Do you have sore feet? I suffer terribly with chilblains
myself.
It
has nothing to do with my feet.
I will not press you on the matter if you are disinclined.
Ah, but you excel so much in the dance, Miss Eliza, that it is cruel to deny me the pleasure of seeing you.
Well, I would not disappoint you, Sir William. Mm.
Don't you like to dance, Miss Bennet?
Oh, I love to dance. When I have a willing partner.
But I am willing. Of course, I cannot answer for my talent in dancing.
Yeah, you dance very well, sir. But I'm afraid you do not enjoy it. No. I do not discern any pleasure in your countenance. You look rather stern, in fact.
Well, it's true that my face is difficult to read.
Whereas I am an open book. I wonder which of us has the advantage. Alas, if I'm happy, I cannot disguise it.
I would like to see that.
You must give me occasion to be happy then. I am by nature inclined to be positive. I very rarely take offence at people, and I'm sure I can never bear a grudge. But I cannot bear rudeness. Have I stunned you into silence? Forgive me. I imagine it must be very hard for you to be here.
How so?
I imagine that habitually you move in very different circles.
Well, not so different.
I have a feeling you are not naturally inclined to pass your time in dancing and balls and such frippery. I imagine you are even now considering how insupportable it would be to pass many evenings in this manner.
You imagine many things. But you are totally wrong, I assure you. My mind was more agreeably engaged.
Alas, we are at an end, sir. But thank you. You dance very well.
So do you. almost as well as you converse.
Oh, I like to talk, it is true, and I make no apologies for it.
Neither should you.
Well, Mr. Darcy, we have acquitted ourselves decently, and now we can part. Despite our early misgivings, I can now report the whole event passed without incident. Now, if you will excuse me.
Mr. Darcy, I've come to save you. What a vulgar affair this is.
Miss Bingley.
I imagine you're thinking you cannot stay here a moment longer. Am I right?
No. I was thinking of the very great pleasure a pair of fine eyes in the face of a pretty woman can bestow.
Whose fine eyes move you to such poetry, sir? Pray do tell.
Miss Elizabeth Bennet.
I'm all astonishment. How long has she been such a favourite? When am I to wish you joy?
A lady's imagination is very rapid.
Nay, let me be the first to congratulate you. You will certainly have a very charming mother-in-law.
The village of Longbourn was only 1 mile from Meryton, a most convenient distance for the young ladies, who were usually tempted thither 3 or 4 times a week, principally to pay their duty to their mother's sister, Mrs. Phillips, who lived there, and also to visit the milliner's shop nearby. The two youngest of the family, Catherine and Lydia, were particularly frequent in these attentions. Their minds were more vacant than their sisters', and when nothing better offered, a walk to Meryton was necessary to amuse their morning hours. However, their aunt was by no means the only draw there. The two girls were bursting with excitement at the recent arrival of a militia regiment in the neighbourhood. It was to remain the whole winter, and Meryton was the headquarters.
Mama, Mama, you should see them. They wear a dark blue jacket with bright red epaulets. Oh.
And their trouser legs are very tight. It is the fashion, you know, with great big riding boots up to the knee.
Oh, how very becoming.
I am sure they are the best looking regiment in the country. Oh. Aunt Phillips agrees with me. They're all very tall, of course. It is a condition of their joining.
And Mama, Aunt Phillips says that she's asked Colonel Forster and Captain Carter to dine on Tuesday.
And there are hints that Colonel Forster may be getting married.
No.
Oh, have no fear, Mama. He's far too old for either of us. And he has a moustache.
Oh, no. I am particularly admiring of Captain Carter. He has curly blonde hair and he looks so becoming in his regimental.
Oh, I'm sure he's very dashing. Have you spoken to him?
I have. Curtsied to him and he bowed right back.
Oh. He said good morning and winked at me.
He did not.
He did too.
Kitty and Lydia, you must be two of the silliest girls in the country. I have suspected it for some time. But now I am convinced.
Papa!
I am astonished, my dear, that you should be so ready to think your own children silly.
If my children are silly, I must hope to be always aware of it.
My dear Mr. Bennet, you must not expect such girls to have the sense of their mother and father. I remember the time when I liked a red coat myself very well. And indeed, I do still at my heart.
Mr. Bennet was prevented from replying by the entrance of the footman with a note for Miss Bennet. It came from Netherfield.
Well, Jane, what is it about? What does he say? Well, Jane, make haste and tell us. Make haste, my love.
It is from Miss Bingley. Oh. She invites me to dine today with her and her sister. Her brother and the gentleman are to dine with the officers.
Oh!
With the officers? I wonder Aunt Phillips did not tell us of that.
Mr. Bingley dining out? Well, that is very unlucky.
Can I have the carriage?
No, my dear. You had better go on horseback, because it seems likely to rain, and then you will have to stay all night.
Oh, Mama, I had much rather go in the coach.
But, my dear, your father absolutely cannot spare the carriage.
Oh. Jane had not been gone long before it rained hard. Her sisters were uneasy for her, but her mother was delighted.
This was a lucky idea of mine indeed.
Till the next morning, however, she was not aware of all the felicity of her contrivance. Breakfast was scarcely over when a servant from Netherfield brought a note for Elizabeth.
Jane is unwell. She caught a chill yesterday. They've called out a doctor to see her.
Well, my dear, if your daughter should have a dangerous fit of illness, if she should die, it will be a comfort to know it was all in pursuit of Mr. Bingley.
People do not die of little trifling colds.
I will go to see her.
But how will you get there? You cannot have the coach, and you are no horsewoman, Lizzie.
I shall walk.
How can you be so silly? In all the mud and dirt, you will not be fit to be seen when you get there.
I shall be fit to see Jane, which is all I want.
Oh!
And walk she did, crossing field after field at a quick pace, jumping over stiles and springing over puddles with impatient activity, and finding herself at last within view of Netherfield, with weary ankles, dirty stockings, and a face glowing with the warmth of exercise, she was shown into the breakfast parlour. Yep.
Miss Elizabeth Bennet.
Miss Bennet.
Heavens, look at you.
I've come to see my sister.
Did you drag yourself through a river to get here? You look really quite wild, my dear.
I walked.
From your house? But that is 3 miles.
3 miles in the mud, and you came by yourself. How incredible.
Have you eaten, Miss Bennet? Will you join us?
No, indeed. I'm here to see Jane. How is she?
The apothecary has just left. She slept ill, I am afraid, and she's still feverish. I think it were better you stayed with her till she is well enough to move. I will make all the arrangements. Please say you'll stay to comfort her.
I would be happy to, sir.
Excellent. She will be very pleased to see you. Let me take you to her.
Oh, thank you.
Well... Did you ever see such a thing, Mr. Darcy? Why would she be scampering about the country simply because her sister has a cold? Her hair so untidy, so blousy. I hope you saw her petticoat. 6 inches deep in mud. I'm afraid, Mr. Darcy, that this adventure has rather affected your admiration of her bright eyes.
Not at all. They were brightened by the exercise.
You think so?
Elizabeth passed the chief of the night in her sister's room, but by the morning, Jane had still not recovered sufficiently to return home. Therefore, Elizabeth requested that a note be sent to her mother to visit Jane. Mrs. Bennet, accompanied by her youngest girl, reached Netherfield soon after the family breakfast. Had she found Jane in any apparent danger, Mrs. Bennet would have been very miserable. But being satisfied on seeing her, that her illness was not alarming. She had no wish of her recovering immediately and returning home at all.
Oh, Mr. Bingley, Jane is a good deal too ill to be moved. We must trespass a little longer on your kindness.
Oh, please do, Mum. My sister, I am sure, will not hear of her removal.
You may depend upon it, madam, that Miss Bennet will receive every possible attention while she remains with us.
I am sure if it was not for such good friends, I do not know what would become of her, for she is very ill indeed, and suffers a vast deal. They were the greatest patients in the world, which is always the way with her, for she has, without exception, the sweetest temper I ever met with. I often tell my other girls that they are nothing to her.
Oh, please.
You have a sweet room here, Mr. Bingley, and a charming prospect over the gravel walk. I do not know a place in the country that is equal to Netherfield. You will not think of quitting it in a hurry, I hope, though you have but a short lease.
No, whatever I do is done in a hurry, and therefore if I should resolve to quit Netherfield, I should probably be off in 5 minutes. At present, I consider myself as quite fixed here.
That is exactly what I should have supposed of you.
I did not know that you were a studier of character, Miss Bennet.
Nothing amuses me more, Mr. Darcy.
Oh, now I fear you think me impulsive and shallow.
No, she does not. Lizzie, remember where you are and do not run on in the wild manner that you are wont to do at home. But, Mr. Bingley, you must be so pleased to be here in the country.
But living in the country must frustrate your study, Miss Bennet. Here one moves in a very confined and unvarying society.
That is a harsh view, sir. And for me, people themselves change so much that there is always something new to be observed in them.
When I am in the country, I never wish to leave it. And when I am in the town, it is pretty much the same. They each have their advantages, and I can be equally happy in either.
That is because you have a charming disposition, sir.
Oh.
Whereas that gentleman seems to think the country has nothing to recommend it at all.
Indeed, Mama, you are mistaken. You quite mistook Mr. Darcy. He only meant that there was not such a variety of people to be met with in the country as in the town, which you must acknowledge to be true.
Well, certainly, my dear.
But, Mama, shall we sit with dear Jane again? She's been a long time alone.
No, 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 no. I think it were better we left her to rest.
Mr. Bingley, I hope you have not forgotten you promised us a ball. We have nothing to look forward to.
Oh, no, indeed. As soon as your sister is recovered, you can name the day of the ball yourself. But you would not wish to be dancing while your sister was ill.
Oh, yes. It were much better to wait till Jane is well again. Yeah. By that time, Captain Carter will most likely be in Meryton again.
I see you follow the movements of the local regiment with great interest, Miss Bennet.
I hope I do. Meryton would be a very dull place without them, I know that.
Well, Mr. Bingley, I cannot thank you enough for your kindness to dear Jane. And as I say, I do fear it will be some days before she is returned once more to us.
She is welcome.
Shall I see you out, Mama?
Oh, it is a shame to leave,
but
though.
But Papa will be missing you. I shall send news first thing tomorrow as to Jane's condition.
Oh, be sure not to move her, though, Lizzie, till she is clear of this. She will be weak for days. I once had a chill that laid me out for a month.
Goodbye, Mum.
Goodbye to you all. Mr. Bingley, forgive me for troubling you with Lizzie all this time, in addition to dear Jane. Goodbye, Miss Bingley. And Mr. Darcy? I nearly forgot about you.
Goodbye, Mum.
Are we to play three-card or five-card tricks?
Oh, three-card, lest we are here all night.
Shall I deal? Oh, Miss Bennet, how sad that you could not join us for dinner.
Oh, I didn't want to leave Jane.
Is she any better?
Still feverish. She was more unwell than I expected. But she's asleep now, thankfully.
We were about to play cards. Will you join us?
Thank you. But I'd rather amuse myself with a book. I shall sit by the fire and read.
Miss Eliza Bennet despises cards. She's a great reader and has no pleasure in anything else.
On the contrary, I take pleasure in many things.
Oh, I have a wonderful hand. I shall bet half my counters. Look how reckless I am. Speaking of reading, Mr. Darcy, do you not have a delightful library at Pemberley?
Well, I hope it is. It has been the work of many generations of my family. Ah, I have no hand to speak of. Perhaps I will read too.
How is your sister? Is Miss Darcy much grown since the spring?
She is now about Miss Elizabeth Bennet's height.
How I long to see her again. She is so very accomplished with her sewing and her music.
I must see your hand, sister. It is amazing to me how young ladies can have patience to be so very accomplished, as they all are. Ah, I have three aces. I'm afraid I've trumped you.
Oh, you beast. Deal again.
I'm afraid I cannot agree with you, Bingley. I cannot boast of knowing more than half a dozen women who are really accomplished.
Pray, sir, what do you understand by the term accomplished?
An accomplished woman must have a thorough knowledge of music, singing, drawing, dancing, and the modern languages. And beside all this, she should have a certain something in her air and manner of walking, the tone of her voice, for the word accomplished to be really deserved. And she must add something yet more substantial in the improvement of her mind by extensive reading.
I'm no longer surprised that you're only knowing six accomplished women, Mr. Darcy. I rather wonder at your knowing any.
Are you so severe upon your own sex as to doubt the possibility of all this?
I never saw such a woman, that is all. And I would hate to live up to such a vision of perfection myself.
Oh, with all this talk of talents, perhaps one of you ladies will oblige us with a little music.
I'm sure Miss Bingley far exceeds my limited accomplishments on the pianoforte.
Will you indulge us, sister?
Very well, if it please you.
While Miss Bingley played, Elizabeth could not help observing, as she turned over the pages in her book, how frequently Mr. Darcy's eyes were fixed on her. She hardly knew how she could be an object of admiration to so great a man, and yet that he should look at her because he disliked her was still more strange. She could only imagine, however, at last, that she drew his attention because there was something about her more wrong and reprehensible than in any other person present.
Miss Bennet, how can we continue to sit and read? Don't you feel a great inclination now to dance a reel? Do I amuse you?
Such spontaneous merriment from you surprised me, that is all.
Do you care to dance, then?
I fear you want me to say yes. You might have the pleasure of despising my taste. But I always delight in overthrowing those kind of schemes and cheating a person of their premeditated contempt. I've therefore made up my mind to tell you that I do not want to dance a reel at all, and now despise me if you dare.
Indeed, I do not dare.
I do not care to play any longer. Miss Bennet, Can I perhaps persuade you to take a turn about the room with me? I assure you it is very refreshing after sitting so long in one attitude.
Very well.
I see we have at last captured the attention of Mr. Darcy. Will you join us, sir?
I fear my joining you will defeat the object of the exercise.
Whatever can you mean, sir? Do you know what he means, Miss Bennet?
Not at all. But depend upon it, he means to be severe on us, and our surest way of disappointing him will be to ask nothing about it.
Come, come. Mr. Darcy, how do you mean to criticise us for taking a turn about the room?
You either choose this method of passing the evening because you are in each other's confidence and have secret affairs to discuss.
We most certainly do not.
Or you walk because you are conscious that your figures appear to the greatest advantage in walking, and I can admire you much better as I sit by the fire.
Oh, very well said, sir.
Ah, oh, shocking. I think they mean to laugh at us. Let me join you, gentlemen. I dearly love a laugh.
Miss Bennet, I believe you like to ridicule others.
No, indeed. I hope I never ridicule what is wise or good, but foolishness and nonsense, I laugh at them whenever I can.
I have always tried to avoid those weaknesses which expose a person to ridicule.
Which weaknesses do you speak of, Mr. Darcy? Vanity and pride, perhaps.
Vanity is a weakness indeed. But pride, where there is a real superiority of mind, pride will always be kept in check.
So, your examination of Mr. Darcy is over, Miss Bennet. And what do you conclude?
I am perfectly convinced that Mr. Darcy has no defect. He owns it himself.
No, indeed, I have made no such claim. I have faults enough, but they are not, I hope, of understanding. My temper I dare not vouch for. It is, I believe, too uncompromising. I cannot forget the follies and vices of others so soon as I ought, nor their offences against myself. My good opinion, once lost, is lost forever.
That is a failing indeed.
Will you laugh at me for it?
No, indeed, you have chosen your fault well. I really cannot laugh at it.
There is, I believe, in every person a natural defect which not even the best education can overcome.
And yours is a propensity to hate everybody.
And yours is willfully to misunderstand them.
Come, let us have some more music. Miss Bennet, can we prevail upon you now?
I'm afraid, sir, I have a more pressing duty to my sister. I must wish you all good night.
Oh, please, send her all our good wishes for a peaceful night.
I will.
Good night, Miss Bennet.
Good night, sir.
The morrow brought good news with it. Jane was much improved and well enough to travel.
You look very pale, Lamp. Perhaps one more night.
Yeah, you are too kind, but really, my mother will be anxious for our return.
And even if she is not, we would not outstay our welcome.
As you wish.
To Mr. Darcy, their departure was welcome.
Thank you.
Elizabeth attracted him more than he liked.
Thank you so much.
He wisely resolved to be particularly careful that no sign of admiration should now escape him. Steady to his purpose, he would not even look at her. Elizabeth, on the other hand, took leave of the whole party in the liveliest spirits.
Mr. Bingley, we are indebted to you. Goodbye. Oh,
goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Oh, no! Wouldn't you want to stay at least till next Tuesday?
Oh, the natural order has been restored.
We met Colonel Forster's fiancée while you were ill, Jane, and she is very young. It is most surprising.
No more than 2 or 3 years older than I. And imagine this, she is actually taller than Colonel Forster by a good couple of inches.
She is very, very tall.
She and I are going to be great friends.
I have suffered too long with such nonsense, Elizabeth and Jane. Please, in the name of all things good, restore some sense to the proceedings for me.
But Catherine and Lydia had not finished. They had much to report about the daily movements of a certain regiment, and at the earliest opportunity, they persuaded their sisters to join them in a trip to Meryton.
Over there, Kitty, look!
Officers! Oh, but see, Mr. Denny has returned from London!
Lydia, please use more discretion. But who's the gentleman with Mr. Denny?
He is very handsome. I've not seen him before.
I don't know, but I'm going to find out. I shall cross the road as if I had business in the milliner's shop. Watch me.
Lydia, please. They're looking at you. Please let us walk on.
Ah, Mr. Denny. What a pleasant surprise. How was your trip to London?
Oh, very good. But allow me to introduce my friend, Mr. Wickham, who has returned with me. I'm happy to say he's accepted a commission in our corps.
Then I look forward to seeing you in your regimentals, Mr. Wickham.
Thank you, Miss...
Bennett. I am with my four sisters. Come here, sisters. We are all Miss Bennets, though I'm the youngest.
Good day to the Miss Bennets.
Oh, welcome to Meryton, sir.
Thank you. After London life, it is a tonic.
It is Mr. Bingley, Jane. Mr. Bingley.
And that stuck-up Mr. Darcy is with him.
Oh, Miss Bennet. Ladies. Oh, what a pleasant surprise. I hope I find you fully recovered, Miss Bennet.
Quite so.
Indeed, we were on our way to Longbourn to inquire after you.
I'm happy to have the opportunity to thank you. You were so kind to me.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine. Denny, good day to you.
And to you, sir. Good day, Mr. Darcy. May I introduce Mr. Wickham, gentlemen?
I cannot... I will not... Good day to you.
The same to you.
We should set off. Bingley.
Good day, Miss Bennet. I'm so pleased to see you well.
Shall we walk on, ladies?
Lead the way.
Did you see that?
I have never seen Mr. Darcy look so uncomfortable.
And Mr. Wickham turned pale as a ghost. What can be the meaning of this?
They must have prior acquaintance of each other.
I'm intrigued now. I mean to find out.
The very next evening, at a gathering at their Aunt Philip's, the girls had the pleasure of hearing that Mr. Wickham had accepted their uncle's invitation and was then in the house.
Miss Bennet, I cannot believe my eyes. How can it be that such an attractive young woman languishes in the corner of the room alone?
I assure you I do not languish, sir. It is not in my nature. Besides, I hope you mean to join me.
I thought you would never ask.
You do not wish to play?
I'm not one for gaming. Besides, I have much to learn about my new neighbours, and I have a feeling you are the person to tell me.
I shall do my best. What would you like to know?
How far is Netherfield from Meryton?
About 2 miles.
Very good. And how long has Mr. Darcy been staying there?
About a month. He is a man of a very large property in Derbyshire, I understand.
Yes, Pemberley is very grand. You could not have met with a person more capable of giving you certain information on that head than myself, for I have been connected with his family from my infancy. You may well be surprised, Miss Bennet, at such an assertion after seeing the very cold manner of our meeting. Are you much acquainted with Mr. Darcy?
As much as I ever wish to be. I find him very disagreeable.
Oh, well, I have known him too long to give an impartial judgment of his character.
But he's not at all liked in Hertfordshire. Everyone is disgusted by his pride.
I wonder whether he is likely to be in this county much longer.
I hope your plans will not be affected by his being in the neighbourhood.
Oh, no. It is not for me to be driven away by Mr. Darcy. If he wishes to avoid seeing me, he must go. We are not on friendly terms, but I have no reason for avoiding him.
Oh, let us not speak of a subject which pains you.
No. I would like to tell you. His father, Miss Bennet, the late Mr. Darcy, was one of the best men that ever breathed. The truest friend I ever had. You know, a military life was not what I was intended for. The church ought to have been my profession. The late Mr. Darcy bequeathed me a living in his church. He was my godfather and excessively attached to me. He meant to provide for me amply and thought he had done it. But when the time came for me to take residence, the position of clergyman was given elsewhere.
Good heavens, but how could that be? Why did you not seek legal redress?
There was just such an informality in the terms of the bequest as to give me no hope from the law. A man of honour could not have doubted the intention, but Mr. Darcy chose to doubt it.
This is quite shocking. But what could have been his motive?
A thorough, determined dislike of me. Had the late Mr. Darcy loved me less, his son might have borne with me better.
I had not thought Mr. Darcy as bad as this.
We were born in the same parish, with the same park. The greatest part of our youth was passed together. My father was very close to the late Mr. Darcy and devoted his time to the care of Pemberley property. It was just before my father's death that Mr. Darcy gave him a voluntary promise of providing for me. As much as a debt of gratitude to my father as of affection to me.
I think it is his abominable pride which has made Mr. Darcy unjust to you.
Pride has been his best friend.
Can such pride ever have served him well?
Well, it has led him to be liberal and generous. He also has a brotherly pride and is a careful and kind guardian of his sister.
What sort of a girl is Miss Darcy?
She is too much like her brother. Very, very proud. As a child, she was affectionate and pleasing and extremely fond of me. She is nothing to me now.
I'm astonished at his intimacy with Mr. Bingley. Do you know Mr. Bingley?
Not at all.
He is a sweet-tempered, amiable, charming man. He cannot know what Mr. Darcy is.
Probably not, though Darcy can please when he chooses.
I am shocked, sir. Though your account confirms what I have already begun to think of Mr. Darcy.
I thank you for hearing me out. But we are called to supper. Will you take my arm?
Gladly, sir. Poor Mr. Wickham, Jane. He's been used abominably.
But, Lizzie, we have not heard Mr. Darcy's side. It would be wrong of us to conjecture the causes or circumstances which may have alienated them without allowing him to defend himself. My dearest Lizzie, only think in what a disgraceful light this account places Mr. Darcy. No man of common humanity, no man who had any value for his character, could be capable of it. Can his most intimate friends be so excessively deceived in him? No.
I can more easily believe that Mr. Bingley has been deceived by his friend, than that Mr. Wickham would invent such a history of himself as he gave me tonight.
I hope you are wrong, but perhaps we will have more opportunity to discover the truth next Tuesday.
How so?
Mr. Bingley has invited us all to a ball at Netherfield.
I do not see him.
Who?
Mr. Wickham. He's not here. The presence of Mr. Darcy has kept him away. Or perhaps he was purposely omitted.
I am certain Mr. Bingley would not behave so ungraciously.
There is Lydia. Perhaps she has some information from the officers.
Lydia!
Where is Mr. Wickham?
Oh, he's gone to town on business. Kitty! Kitty! Captain Carter is over there! Come!
You see? There is an innocent explanation, Lizzie.
I do not imagine his business would have called him away just now if he did not wish to avoid a certain gentleman here. Here is Mr. Bingley. Jane, you must question him about this affair.
Miss Bennet, would you care to dance?
Gladly, sir. Lizzie!
Will no one dance with you either?
Oh, Charlotte, I have so much to tell you.
A matter settled between Mr. Bingley and Jane. I see he has eyes for no one else.
My mother is convinced, but I fear Jane may meet obstacles in the form of Mr. Bingley's sisters. But no, I have to tell you of Mr. Darcy. Pride is not the only sin he is guilty of. He has behaved so abominably.
Hush, Lizzie. Your speech is ill-timed.
Miss Bennet, might I have the pleasure of this dance?
Elizabeth, Mr. Darcy waits on you.
Yes. Yes, I suppose. Of course.
Shall we take our place in the set?
The quadrille is not my favourite dance. It is your turn to say something now, Mr. Darcy. You ought to make some comment on the size of the room or the number of couples.
Whatever you wish me to say, consider it said.
Very well. That reply will do for the present. Now we may be silent.
Do you and your sisters walk often to Meryton?
Yes. When you met us there the other day, we'd just been forming a new acquaintance. Mr. Wickham.
Mr. Wickham is blessed with such happy manners as may ensure his making friends. Whether he may be equally capable of holding on to them is less certain.
He's been so unlucky as to lose your friendship, and in a manner which he is likely to suffer from all his life. You're very quiet, sir. I remember hearing you say that you hardly ever forgave, that your resentment once created was unappeasable. You're very cautious, I suppose, to its being created.
I am.
And never allow yourself to be blinded by prejudice.
I hope not. Madam, may I ask to what these questions tend?
Merely to the illustration of your character. I'm trying to make it out.
I would urge you not to tax yourself further on the subject.
Why not?
I can readily believe that reports may vary greatly with respect to me.
That does not trouble you.
I am often troubled, ma'am, but I hope I know what I am. Besides, I would not wish you to stray into impertinence. I would save you from such an accusation. It would do you no credit. Good evening, Miss Bennet.
Miss Eliza.
Miss Bingley.
So, I hear you're quite delighted with George Wickham. Your sister has been talking to me about him and asking me 1,000 questions, and I find that the young man omitted to tell you that he was the son of old Wickham, the late Mr. Darcy's steward. As to Mr. Darcy using him ill, it is perfectly false. From the contrary, he has always been remarkably kind to him, and it is George Wickham who has treated Mr. Darcy in an infamous manner. I pity you, Miss Eliza, for this discovery of your favourite's guilt.
I have heard you accuse him of nothing worse than of being the son of Mr. Darcy's steward, and of that, I can assure you, he informed me himself.
I beg your pardon.
Insolent girl. Jane!
Jane!
Jane! Pray, tell me, what have you learned about Mr. Wickham?
Mr. Bingley does not know the whole of the history, but he is perfectly convinced that Mr. Wickham is by no means a respectable man.
But Mr. Bingley does not know Mr. Wickham himself?
No, he never saw him till the other morning.
This account, then, is what he's heard from Mr. Darcy. I'm perfectly satisfied.
Oh, don't be so hasty to judge Mr. Darcy, Lizzie.
No, Jane. I'm afraid I'm determined to hate him. And neither you nor anyone else can persuade me to do otherwise.
In episode 1 of Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, Mrs. Bennet was played by Samantha Spiro, Mr. Bennet by David Troughton, and Elizabeth by Pippa Nixon. Mr. Darcy was Jamie Parker, Mr. Bingley, Joshua Maguire, Jane Bennet, Lydia Wilson, and Miss Bingley, Fenella Woolgar. Lydia was Georgie Fuller, Kitty, Carrie Saleri, and Mary, Rosie Wyatt. Charlotte Lucas was Michelle Terry, Sir William Lucas, Sean Murray, Mr. Denny, Arthur Hughes, and Mr. Wickham, Joel McCormack. The narrator was Amanda Root. Pride and Prejudice is dramatised by Charlotte Jones and directed by Sally Avens.
And you can hear episode 2 next Sunday at 3.
Jane Austen died aged 41 of natural causes.
If arsenic is present, a deposit will form on the side of the dish. Ah, there we are.
Lindsay Ashford's novel offers an alternative explanation.
This lady, at the time of her death, had quantities of arsenic in her person more than 15 times the normal level.
The mysterious death of Jane Austen.
The demise of your friend was brought about intentionally.
It was murder. I knew it.
A new drama for BBC Radio 4 this Monday to Friday at 10:45 in the morning and 7:45 in the evening.